Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals. It's the Gift Planning Development Videocast. I'm your host, Joe Tumalo, CEO of Gift Planning Development. And I am so happy today because I have a guest who gets the fact that plan giving is everyone's business and that it should not be put in a silo, which we keep preaching to you all, and has some great, simple, practical ways to integrate gift planning, especially in annual fun, which we know is where is really our incubator for gift planning conversations, for most of our gift planning conversations. So I am thrilled to bring you yet another thought leader, expert in this industry, in the fundraising space, to help you guys get better results and be more effective. And welcome Tammy Ruda.
Thank you, Joe. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, and Tammy is with West Wind, Consulting out of New York. Would you say New York State? How would you describe your...
Yeah, we are located in Ithaca, and we do a lot of work with New York State organizations, but we also have clients throughout the country.
Yeah, that's great. So generally, I always send out a questionnaire to videocast guests, and I don't often read the questions, but you've made such good points. If it's okay, I'd like to go through these because they're great points. So we always talk about, you know, what are the top three takeaways that we want people to get from this session? And they're very eloquent. So the first one is annual giving and plan giving are complementary ways for your donors to give, right?
Absolutely. There's definitely no either or when it comes to annual giving or planned giving. So, and I think, you know, as it's important for us to remember that getting one of those gifts doesn't preclude the donor from giving the other one.
Do you find, and I know I do, especially with some older donors, not often, and I don't want to make a rule so that it discourages people, but sometimes the older people say, you know what, older plan giving donors, I'll give you, or I'm kind of done giving, you're in my plans, and be thankful that you have that. Right. It doesn't happen often. That's my experience. I don't know.
I've definitely heard the same thing, you know, and I think that we want to talk about helping the institution today as well as helping the institution forever. And that really is how annual and plan giving partner together much of the time, not all the time. I know there are plenty of plan giving vehicles that help your institution today. So I'm not, please plan giving people don't attack. But when you're thinking about somebody who said, I've put you in my estate plans, they're thinking about supporting your organization, obviously in the future and probably from their perspective, as far in the future as possible. You want to encourage them to continue. They probably have been supporting your organization, right? That's our typical profile of a plan giving donor. And so I think, you know, our job is to make the case that what you were doing was really important and really impactful, and we need you to keep doing it.
Yeah, and by the way, when we talk about these ideas, I always remind fundraisers, it's not just in your appeal letters or emails, it's your one-on-one speak, right? So you can apply these, and you should apply these concepts both to the written word and verbal orally over the phone or Zoom with donors.
Absolutely. And I think it's important, you make an important point that all of the communications from our organizations should reinforce each other. We should all be, you know, singing from the same page, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the next point you gave was that annual giving staff can lend expertise in segmentation for direct marketing to plan giving. So for plan giving marketing, collaborate with your annual fund team to think about segmentation, which people don't. I mean, a simple example as a plan giving donor, my wife and I have a number of charities in our state plans. They know we're in their plans, yet they'll still send us a postcard saying, please consider putting ABC charity in your will. And right. And I'm more critical because I'm in the business, but I'm looking at it and saying, well, you're in my will. You know, you're in my will, right? I mean, it's bad enough that you ignore us, but then on top of that, you send me a postcard completely ignoring the fact that we've done something.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you've hit on one of the main reasons why I advocate strongly for segmentation, which is we need to show our donors and our prospective donors that we know who they are. Right. And so when they send you the postcard, when you're already in the plan giving recognition society, they're demonstrating the opposite to you, which is that they don't know who you are. So I think, you know, we are in a relationship-based business, and that extends or should extend to direct marketing.
Now, when somebody says, Tammy, this is great. You guys can sit here all day long and pontificate and come up with all these great ideas, but we only have so many resources.
Yes.
How do you respond to that, especially on the plan giving side? Because a lot of people outsource their plan giving marketing. Mm-hmm. And I'm very familiar with the outsourced marketing providers. I'm pretty sure that they would do segmentation, right? So how do you, but the people might say, well, it's going to be expensive. If we're
you know,
outsourcing
it. I think my initial reaction to your comment about that's going to be expensive is it's actually more expensive to alienate your prospects. So, you know, opportunity cost is not as obvious, but is definitely an issue. So I think that the investment in segmentation more than pays for itself in terms of your increased return. And also, as I said, strengthening relationships that will lead to further philanthropy in the future. So I also think, you know, there's a balance. So if you wanted to target and segment, there's a couple of different ways to do it. One is to create, let's say, a different piece for each segment. Okay, so I'm writing a totally different letter for people that I think, would be interested in a annuity versus people who are interested in a trust. There's also, because, you know, luckily we live in the age of technology, the opportunity where nowadays that can be variable or conditional text that swaps out in a single piece. And, you know, back in the day, you know, when I started in this business, you know, I was doing Microsoft Word merges, you know, and being proud of being able to swap out like individual words, but you can swap out images, you can swap out entire letter text, change the signer, change the photographs, you name it. It can be done. So I think that it's worth exploring those opportunities and maybe targeting them, in terms of the ones that would require the most investment. You know, that's where segmentation comes in again. You don't have to send it to everyone. You identify those who are the most likely prospects to respond.
So we're talking about digital print technology.
Yeah. And I think it's becoming, you know, every year it gets cheaper. And it's been around for a while now. So I think it's within the grasp of many organizations, and certainly with a little, perhaps budget finagling, you know, finding some resources that maybe aren't producing as much as they used to and redirecting them to try something new.
Yeah. So let's come up with a couple of segmentation ideas. We've talked about a couple already. The first one is current plan giving donors versus prospects,
yep.
Right? I think that's a huge, huge one. You can acknowledge, right? You could say either just want, thank you. We know we are in your plans and we thank you for that. Just want to give you a heads up of what we're doing in this program with this program. Or we know from the research that your plan giving donors could do more. Gift annuitants could donate for another gift annuity. Mm-hmm. The research shows that 50% of the gift annuitants will get at least a second or a third one.
Nice.
Right? So, or if they're a gift annuitant, why can't we have a conversation about them including us in their will as well, right?
Exactly, yep.
You mentioned gift vehicle type, and maybe we would segment that by age.
Yes.
So we're not gonna send gift annuity messaging to 30, 40, and maybe not 50-year-olds necessarily, right?
Yep, absolutely, yes.
What else? So,
there are... one of the things that we've noticed, right, is that the most loyal annual giving donors are your best plan giving prospects. So you might want to have a special segmentation that acknowledges how loyally they're supporting your organization, and then ask them to add to that, right? So this is another way of acknowledging what they're already doing and demonstrating that you know them.
Right. And certainly if you're a university...
Yes.
You could target by, if you're a big one, you could target by college, engineering school versus business school, et cetera.
And oftentimes at, you know, universities, certainly privates and publics have been coming into this as well. Reunion year, every 5 years, you've got an excuse to ask people to think bigger, right? I always joke about the fact that I know exactly what my husband gave me for my 10th wedding anniversary. You know, it was a sapphire and a diamond tennis bracelet. What did I get for 12? I have no idea. And wow. I think that our society is really anniversary driven in some ways. And so making that case to do an extra special gift on the anniversary of your graduation, whether or not you have a physical or virtual reunion, using that anniversary lever is something you could do in a segmentation.
Beautiful. I like that a lot. Yeah. How about, I always thought for a animal welfare to have cat, segment for cat people, segment for dog people.
Absolutely. I think, you know, segmenting by interest, you know, so planned gifts can be designated to any interest at your organization generally, right? So thinking about people who want to support dogs versus cats, or people who want to support research versus patient care, or people who want to support, you know, athletics versus academics in a school setting.
Yeah. A little off topic, but you alluded to current times in this pandemic, COVID time. Yes. You guys have a fair amount of clients and you're talking to a lot of people. What are you seeing? Anything, any like just overall summary of what you're seeing this year? I'm seeing some sectors are up, some are flat, some are down a little bit, but most are not. I've not had anybody say things are horrible. Although I saw something on the news, maybe CNN this week, that said that it was a whole story about how nonprofits are struggling, but they look like the smaller ones.
Yeah, I would say, you know, happily, most of our clients are maintaining, or in some cases even growing, because they're even in this environment, trying new things and taking steps to be more forthright in their fundraising. And it's working. You know, I think obviously, you know, again, I mentioned relationships have to be in direct marketing as well as in one-to-one conversations. So, you know, direct marketing materials are making a nod, acknowledging, you know, what's going on, but also noting how that makes donors even more important. And, you know, if donors are in the position where they can continue to help, we're certainly asking them to do that. And they seem to be responding.
Yeah. Any specific tips?
I think that my general tip is always never raise the objection for your prospects. Okay. Let them do that. So when you decide not to ask because of a pandemic or a weak economy or just, you know, general unrest in our country, you name it, you're raising the objection for the donor. And that is a no-no. So my best advice is move forward, be thoughtful, be human, but keep going.
Well said. My favorite expression, I use it constantly, both in my own work and working with other, the contract work I do with other gift officers and in all my workshops and whatnot, is don't make decisions for your donors.
Yes.
Which is what you said in a different way. And yeah, that's just so, so many times. And sometimes it's so subtle, we don't realize. And I have to catch myself and say, wait a minute, why am I making that decision? Why don't I call the donor and ask them to have a conversation? Mm-hmm. And I'll even say to them, I didn't know whether to talk to you about another gift this year, because you just made a big gift. At the same time, I thought this would be of interest to you. And then I realized, you know what? Why should I make that decision for you? Is this an appropriate time to be talking about another gift?
Right? Yeah, I think that's terrific. The other thing that, you know, sort of, you know, when you get up to the macro level, you know, I was working with a client and they had a pretty hefty chunk of people sign a petition with a relevant and meaningful complaint about, you know, something that was going on at the institution. And these people were all recent alumni. So there was a discussion, should we just stop soliciting all recent alumni? Well, the number of signatories to this petition was about only 1/10 of all young alumni, right? So in a sense, when you react to that kind of feedback, I mean, you should the institution should consider that feedback and respond to that feedback through, you know, addressing the issue. But to decide that 10% speaks for 90% is always a mistake. And I'm happy to report that the institution did continue to move forward with solicitations, even though there was this issue going on. So it pays off.
Yeah. Another thing off topic, but just because I don't get a lot of annual fund experts on here. So I know you guys see it, but, and I want you to comment on it. I'm just shocked by how many organizations don't mail enough. They're so worried about bombarding people. Yet I, over the years, doing this 15 years and talking to direct mail experts, annual fund experts, it always pays for itself over and over. And it's amazing how people will mail twice a year, three times a year. And then I see, I've been doing contract work for a place called Salesian Missions for a number of years. They mail 30 times. We mail 30 times a year, 30, 30 times a year. Now, some people, I'm on the phone talking to donors. Some will say, yeah, you guys mail too much. But, you know, and I'll say, well, look, we can cut it down for you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them will say, no, that's all right. So,
yeah. Well, I think
the older people, I'm sorry. It's usually the older people that say that.
Interestingly, they're also the most likely to respond to direct marketing. They're like, stop pushing my button.
But I'll donate anyway. They just need something to mention.
I agree with you. I mean, I understand the constraints, right? I mean, mail is clearly not cheap. You've got the production of the physical piece, and then you have the actual transportation, right? So mail costs do make it challenging for many organizations. However, again, if I can go back to segmentation, there are certain people you should be mailing a lot. And those are generally the people who've given to you before. And especially those who've given to you recently within the last, 3 years to 5 years, depending, on your budget. Because the person most likely to give is the person who last gave, we all know that in our industry, but it does play itself out in direct marketing as well. There's also, as we talked about, you can identify people who a particular cause or initiative at your organization would really appeal, right? So you need to include them, even if you feel like, oh, it'll be the fifth piece they got. And then I'm just going to say it. Okay, I write direct mail and I, in my dreams, think that everyone is reading it. In reality, sadly, I am the only one. Okay, so you think you're bombarding them and you think you're overwhelming them, but in fact, you are just trying to get noticed because many of the things you send aren't ever opened or even really noticed. So I think that you need to put aside, your own perspective because you are a perspective of one if you're producing these pieces and understand that people aren't actually seeing or reading or acknowledging them all.
There's a guy, a marketing guru online, Donald Miller, has a great, wonderful book called Story Brand. And he has all these courses and you can actually, you used to be able to go 3 days and get certified in his methodology and marketing. And it's just such a really simple way of explaining things. And he said it used to be the old acronym or the old saying was 8 to 10 touches before someone would take action. He says, Donald says, now it's 8 to 10 touches before anybody even notices you. Then it's another on top of that, another 8 to 10 once you've gotten their attention, right? So, yeah, we're all in this business, empathetic, good-natured people, and we don't want to alienate anyone. So sometimes we don't realize that we are holding ourselves back by our own prejudices.
Yeah.
I hope that's not too dramatic.
No, but I do think, it's good to remember that. There is another way too that sometimes I feel people hold back, which is, thinking of themselves, not thinking also about themselves as the donor. And that can hold you back, right? That's another. Well, if that number is just too big for you personally, I've seen this happen. It's like, I've had students, right, make phone calls on behalf of annual funds at many institutions, and they think everyone they're calling is their parents, and they're like, oh, my mom could never give $250. Well, you're not calling your mom, and I feel like that's another kind of self-editing that we do. We kind of can't always get outside of ourselves. And you need to do that because we're working with a very diverse group of potential donors. I'd like to think we're all unique, so I don't think you're soliciting yourself ever.
Well, there's another great point that you gave here, a takeaway. Plan giving staff can share expertise in communicating and connecting with older donors, with annual giving folks. Do you find that annual giving folks tend to be younger people?
Yes. It's been changing with time, but it still tends to be, sort of the entry level job in development. I personally am a lifer. Or at least I did 29 years in annual giving. I think it's that important and that meaningful, and I don't think it's a stepping stone. But many people apparently do. And so you end up with having a lot of recent grads, young college grads in your office. And I find that, they need some coaching in terms of how to interact with people from other generations.
Yeah, they just don't have the life experience. It's not that they're not smart or
exactly
not competent. It's just that there's not enough, it's the life experience that you can't really.
Right. And I think the fact that, they have colleagues, or a colleague or colleagues, depending on the size of the shop, who's interacting with plan giving, which tends to have an older profile of prospect and donor, you guys have expertise that you could really lend to the annual giving staff, So we're soliciting these people. And in many organizations, we're also trying to recruit them and staff them as volunteers. And I think that there's a lot we could learn from plan giving in that regard.
Nice. Just checking my notes. Anything else as we're winding down here that you want to, any other points that you want to?
Well, I have a couple of things. One is just, I feel like a public service announcement about direct marketing. So one of the things that can cause friction between the annual fund and plan giving departments is that the plan giving department will be like, let's do a letter together where we ask for the annual gift and the plan gift in one letter. Mm. And if your annual giving staff has good direct marketing expertise, they're going to say no to you. And that's because in a direct marketing piece, you're trying to get the person to act, and you can, trust me, it's hard to get them to do one thing. Okay. Right. We know, an outstanding direct mail piece, that's not to your last year's donors, but to a sort of a broad constituency might get a 3-6% response rate. Okay. That's when we're asking them to just do one thing. If we ask them to do two things and complicate it, that's going to go down. And so both teams are going to lose. So I just want everyone to understand that when your annual giving team says no, they're not actually being difficult. They're actually trying to ensure good returns for you and for them by suggesting those be separate.
So you're saying within the actual body,
yes,
of the, not necessarily within the reply slip where it says I've included ABC charity in my plans, right? They've already made that.
I'm fine with that. Decision. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Going to donate, and then, oh, by the way, right?
It's right. But if it's like, hey, it's your reunion, can you give us $5,000 outright and create a $5,000 annuity? Don't do that. Because you know what? You've made it too hard for the donor. And when something's hard, I put it down and I move on.
Yeah. Back to Donald Miller. He says that the human brain does not like to work too hard, that it doesn't like to burn calories. And if it has to, it's going to go look for something easier.
Yep. So that's what I like this guy. I'm going to have to go and sign up for his site.
Highly recommend him. Great. He just has some really simple ways. And also, just a side note, as a plan giving person, I have to say, not only don't ask for a $5,000 outright gift and $5,000 gift annuity, never ask for a $5,000 gift annuity.
Sorry.
It's too low. It's right by the time the donor passes, there's not going to be any money left. So
yes,
I always recommend to people, bump it up. Even if it's 10,000, my opinion is $10,000 minimum for a gift annuity, bump that up to $20,000, $25,000. The amount of work that's involved in setting it up, sending the checks out. Again, by the time the donor passes on, there's not much left. So just a little plan giving side note on the gift annuities here.
Well, thank you for that. I don't want any plan giving malpractice here in my interview or my conversation with you. So the only other thing I wanted to mention is one of the things that I find as a commonality between plan giving and annual giving is that they both feel like major gifts isn't helping them.
How do you mean?
So I hear this a lot, like, oh, the major gift officers, you know, they have the relationships with the top people who can make or break, you know, any campaign that an organization does. And when they're out there asking, they're often not including an annual fund component in their ask, or not including a plan giving component. So this sort of concept of a comprehensive gift that includes all three ways of giving, you know, the third way being capital/endowment. I'm going to combine them as one. But, you know, I think that this is another reason why we ought to become more closely allied, because I think that we could together work within our organizations to focus on the power of comprehensive giving and really come up with ways that make it easy for our colleagues to do these asks. You know, I think we can coach them on how to make, you know, I can help with how to make the case for the annual fund. And Joe, you can help tell them how to make the case for the plan gift. And they know the third one, right? But So I think the key is they probably don't do these as often as we'd like because they're not as comfortable with them. And so I think we could work together to basically raise the comfort level of our colleagues in asking for these gifts that fall outside of the normal major gift mindset.
Great stuff. So good stuff. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And so let's plug you and your services. How can, first of all, and put you on the spot here, but I'm sure you're going to have a good answer. No pressure now, Tammy. What problems do you guys fix for your clients? What problems do you fix?
Well, that's a great question. I think, you know, one of the biggest things that we fix is that a lot of people, unfortunately, are out there making decisions about how to organize fundraising efforts without having data and analytics to base them on. And so I think we work with our colleagues to make sure, and our clients, I'm sorry, to make sure that they have the reporting that they need to be able to make really data informed decisions about how to move forward. And that would be in our annual giving work and in our alumni relations work even, and in our campaign related work. I think that's a common thread, is really helping people to understand their programs in a deeper level. And that helps you see what the potential is. And it also helps you manage day to day.
Nice. Great. Tammy Ruta, West Wind Consulting. How can people get in touch with you?
So, my email is tammy@west-windconsulting.com. And Tammy's with an IE, but you know what? I know you all think it's with a Y. And so I told the programmers behind the scenes to make that work too. So you
one can M reach or two M's.
Two M's. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Don't do TAMI or you'll never find me. But anyway, you can go to our website, west-windconsulting.com. I have a blog there. And this is one of the things I'm most excited about. I've launched it. I've done only three posts so far. But like you, Joe, I want to help everyone in our industry do better and raise more money for their organizations. So if people, you can, on our website, you can visit my blog and you can sign up to get notifications when I make posts.
Great. Wonderful. Tammy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.